and says you feel kind of lost and sort of too much loosened up. Too much loosened up. You gave up thinking about yourself. So much junk. Many of you dropped off those things, I think, and some are still working on them because they seem to not go away. When Sesshin gets so intense on the third or fourth day, sleep becoming so shallow and short, you can call it a heated up state. I don't know if this always happens, but I notice I'm waking up like super early and thinking it must be time and it's still the middle of the night. Sometimes this, our whole rhythm of the day starts changing. Tobin says, my mind goes freely away in this heated up state. I say goodbye to Sesshin and take off, running around in Paris, Tokyo, a little street in Kyoto, until the Doan brings me back. Ding, ding, I rush back. What I was dreaming about seemed more real than actually being there. These experiences make me wonder what this mind is. That rings true for me. I feel like we may be really settled and present more than the earlier days of Sesshin, but because I think the mind is just so, becomes so open and flexible that when it runs off to Paris, it really gets into it. More real than even being there. But then, ding, ding, and we can, I think sometimes I have that experience. The mind is so flexible, it can just come right back. Instead of like, dragging it back through every little road of Paris all the way back across the ocean to Santa Cruz into the Zendo. It's more like, ding, ding, okay, here now. The mind becomes flexible and a little out of control, but also workable. Kobin says, do you realize the change of your mind condition during Sesshin? What do you think the difference is between mind in regular life and mind in Sesshin? Everybody knows the answer. Your mind responds to the surrounding circumstances. So the more information that's coming in, the more activated the mind is. During sitting, kinhin, standing, in Sesshin, the mind expands, responding to the many, many, many things around you. Even the sleep pattern changes in Sesshin. These last few days, people haven't slept much. It's kind of resting with a very deep, short sleep. Still, your mind was awake during that sleep. You noticed every single sound, and yet your mind was completely resting. I think the moon is really full these days, and your body feels it, even through the ocean fog which covered this place last night. What kind of sitting mind is with you? Sometimes the mind sits still. Sometimes it freezes colder than ice. Sometimes it boils more than hot water. So we observe the quality of our life and directly, kindly deal with it, wisely relate with it. It's your life, nobody else's. So you're in charge of taking care of it. Nobody controls your life. Nobody controls your life. We just receive it. inevitably studying the self because it's in our face all day long. By studying the self, we sometimes forget the self. We just exhaust studying the self and naturally forget the self, and then actualized by myriad things, it's no longer us doing our thing. And meanwhile, this forgotten self is in the great vehicle, is infused with the bodhisattva vow. It's not just forgetting the self to simply enjoy this body and mind experience. It is simply enjoying this body and mind experience with, for, and as all beings. A story could be told of the aspiring bodhisattva noticing many others, or surrounded by many others, so naturally a mind of kindness, loving kindness can arise with the wish, may all these beings be happy and free. Based on such a mind of loving kindness, a mind of compassion can arise, wishing, may all these beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Based on this mind of compassion, the aspiration can arise. May I not actually this little self, but big I, may this body and mind experience now continue to live for the benefit of all these suffering beings to relieve their suffering. May I, big I, drop off small I, realize great awakening only for the sake of freeing all beings. And thus a bodhisattva is born with this aspiration, taking up the responsibility. This life, this particular life, I dedicate to the welfare of all beings and relieving suffering. Realizing great awakening may be just as simple as just dropping away this ancient view of a separate, independent self. And then with this aspiration, then we study the self and forget the self in all its particular permutations. So if there's a stingy self, a small self that's holding back because I have to take care of me and mine, then we study that, forget that, let that open, and giving, generosity, dana paramita, naturally comes forth when the illusion of the stingy self is opened. If there's the particular permutation of the greedy self that that doesn't mind harming others to get something for itself, we study that one and we open that one up. We actually stop. We no longer need to do something for ourselves at the expense of others. Thus, harmlessness, Shila Paramita, comes forth from a let go self. And if the particular permutation of the small self is the form of resistance and annoyance, anger, and impatience, we open that one up, let this go, and just openly receive what's happening with great patience. Kshanti Paramita. One time a monk asked Xiang Lin, "What's the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?" And Xiang Lin said, "Painful legs after long sitting."
No,
he didn't. We have to be very patient to accept Xiang Lin's answer. Many people were asked this question over the centuries, and they all gave different answers. And that's a surprising one. So surprising that Patrick even doubts. Doubts was even said. What's the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? What's the purpose of Zen? Painful legs after long sitting. You could say this is a great celebration of Kshanti Paramita. Just patiently sitting. Yes.
I know we're trying not to talk, but I must.
You may talk.
Because of what Reverend Tiergott said, I respectfully remind you that when you went to Taskara and you sent me a letter, you said, "This is good old knee-burning Zen. You've got to do it."
Yes. Family style of knee burnings and I think of all these paramitas, well, each one is the essence of Sashin, but particularly patience is the supreme practice. Can we stay here? day after day, with sore body, in the face of great resistance to what's happening, and also with people, receive what's happening and not fight back. That's the opposite of patience. Somehow trying to come back with a good one. So earlier in the session, I forget how it came up, but somehow I was reminded of this case 97 in the Blue Cliff Record, which is unusual for a koan story because it doesn't quote any Zen teachers. It's simply a little paragraph from the Diamond Sutra, straight up, became a koan. I think this is the time to bring it up because this is about patience. So the story, this case 97, is quotes the Diamond Sutra, the Prajnaparamita Diamond Sutra, and it says, "If one is scornfully reviled by others, or slighted by others, that person should have fallen into miserable ways because of their misdeeds in former times. But because of being scornfully reviled by others in the present, or being slighted by others in the present, the misdeeds of former times are thereby erased, and they will attain unexcelled, complete, perfect awakening." And so we sometimes hear this kind of thing as like, we like our painful knees because we're burning up karma. So I think, I don't know about that. We're just burning up our legs. I don't think it's like a kind of like a kind of karmic bank account that we're like, we're using up this, because we're suffering, we're using up hard times. We're using up the hard times that are coming to us so they won't come later. Maybe that's how people might see this burning up karma as a good thing. So I think it's not exactly like that, but I mean, this is a koan, right? So there's some subtlety to this point. And interestingly, I think it's interesting that in that koan, it doesn't quote the first sentence that comes before that piece of the sutra. The whole paragraph would be Sabuti. The Buddha is talking to his disciple. Sabuti, if good men and women accept and hold, read and recite this sutra, the Diamond Sutra, the Prajna Paramita Sutra, the teaching of vast emptiness. You see, when they say they hold, read, and recite the sutra, is a kind of, I understand that to be, they take up the truth of emptiness. It's not like it's not just about reading the sutra. But because it's a sutra, they take it up. They take up the sutra means they see that everything that's happening is not what they think it is. That's how I'd understand taking up this sutra. So if good men and women uphold and take up this sutra, then if they're slighted by others, you know, instead of falling into miserable destinies because of past misdeeds, the misdeeds are erased or burnt up. So it's interesting, I think, that the Blue Cliff Record didn't say if they take up the Sutra of Emptiness, Maybe that's just like a given. But the sixth ancestor, at least this is attributed to the sixth ancestor, a commentary on the whole Diamond Sutra. And he says, Buddha says that people who hold the sutra should have the honor and support of celestial and human beings, yet because of the existence of obstructions by grave actions of earlier lives, even if they currently manage to accept and hold this extremely profound emptiness sutra of the Buddha's, nevertheless, they're slighted by others. But because they accept and hold this scripture, they do not conceive of images of a person or a self, which the Diamond Sutra teaches over and over. Don't give rise to the idea of a separate person or self in addition to the experience that's happening. Because they don't conceive of these ideas of person and self, they always act respectfully, whether to enemy or friend, without any vexation or bitterness in mind, innocent of any calculation, always practicing prajna, paramita, moment to moment, without backsliding. Because they're able to practice in this way, they can dissolve the barriers caused by harmful deeds from infinite past eons up to the present life. So, when slighted by others, when annoyed by others, we're like a harmonious bunch here in Sesshin, but we're also super sensitized on the fourth day. So the slightest raise of an eyebrow of our Dharma friends could set our mind on fire with total annoyance. But if we remember prajna paramita, there's no person raising an eyebrow over there. There's no self receiving the raised eyebrow over here. Then we may be able to patiently perceive a lot of just messed up junk. As Coben says, a lot of junk happens. From others, you know, traditionally these three kinds of patience are like patience when harmed by others, so particularly like difficulty coming from other people gets its own category. And then a second type of patience is patience just with suffering in general, like sore legs after long sitting, that we can't blame on anybody really, except maybe we could have tried to get out of Sesshin, but someone convinced us to stay and we could blame it on them. Oh, and the third type of patience is patience with vast emptiness. I remember years ago reading in some sutra, just this phrase, I was probably talking, you know, about these different kinds of patience, but the phrase that stuck with me, that almost like this phrase stuck in my head, which is the patient acceptance of the uncreate. I remember bringing that to Dokusan. What is this patient acceptance of the uncreate? But somehow it settled into my heart as a kind of something provocative. Patient acceptance that nothing actually is created or produced. and nothing actually ceases. This is hard to accept and be patient with, because we want to be a person in a world doing things. It's hard to be patient with that sometimes too. But so, Vasubandhu, he has another three categories of patience: physical, verbal, and mental. Just like harmlessness, or Shila has the categories of body, speech, and mind precepts. He says, what is this physical patience? In an instance where someone visits harmful actions on you by invading, wreaking destruction, seizing, striking, and even inflicting serious injury, one remains able in all such instances to patiently endure it. In an instance where one observes other beings placed in danger, subjected to physical force and afflicted with terror, one physically stands in for them and yet remains free of any weariness or indolence in doing so. This is physical patience. So I hear it as patience when physical harm comes to us, but also it's the patience of not physically retaliating back, hitting someone back. And a bodhisattva thing too, one's not only willing to be patient with the physical harm coming to oneself, but is willing to put oneself in physical danger to protect others. That's, I think, very advanced patience practice. I know there was one protester Satya was telling me about someone who was trying to block the nuclear arms train from the California production plant, and lay down on the tracks, right? And I think many times they would just stop the train when these protests would happen over and over. And at one point, as I recall, something like they gave the word, like, we've stopped so many times before. We have to keep going. We can't let these people do this. Just keep going. He'll move. He didn't move, and his legs were cut off by this train. Yeah. What was his name? Brian Wilson. Yeah. And still travels around on crutches. Pedal bike, hand pedal bike, to give talks about peace and stopping arms production and so on. Wow. This is like major bodhisattva patience practice. Physical patience. Verbal patience is, in an instance where one encounters someone who subjects one to cursing, one remains silent, or subjects, where one encounters someone who curses you, you remain silent and endure it without responding in kind. In an instance where one encounters someone who, with no basis in any principle, scolds or rebukes, one should respond with gentle words and deferential accommodation. In an instance where someone subjects oneself to false accusations or arbitrary and fierce slanders, one should just endure it patiently. This is verbal patience. So, again, when verbal harm comes to us, we're patient, and also I would take this as we don't verbally fight back. This is like the well-known story of Hakuin with the baby that we love so much because it's a supreme patience. You horrible monk. Also the ska. Is that so? You amazing, brilliant monk. Also the ska. You patiently receive abuse and praise and not even defending oneself. Sometimes it may be appropriate to just get the facts clear, but I think as a practice, I think often it doesn't matter. Sometimes it might, right? So there's a skillful means. We might, no, I really need to bring this out this other side for this person. But sometimes, as a kind of training, maybe even, oh, okay. Especially if it's something that it really doesn't matter that much. It's like, okay. It's very hard to be accused of something, especially falsely accused. That's in traditional texts where you're trying to locate this false view of the independent self. In order to kind of study it and forget it, first you have to kind of find the view. And some people, I don't really have a sense of like the independent self here. What is that? Well, if you want to kind of, what the technique to find it is, get in a situation where you're falsely accused, or even just imagine being falsely accused, and that the I didn't do it. It congeals into this lump of little solid me. So that's a good one, I think. People discovered that. Truly accused is also difficult, but not quite as difficult. Like Vasubandhu says, there's two types of scoldings. First, those which are based on truth, and second, those which are false. In the case of those where what is said is true, then I can bring forth a sense of shame or remorse or like apology, maybe like, okay, yeah, no, I see that. And then and we're still practicing patience. In the case where what is said is false, it's a circumstance that has nothing to do with me. That's the truth, right? If we're falsely accused, it really doesn't have to do with me. But ironically, that's when the me gets most activated. It's comparable to the sounds of an echo and comparable to the sound of the passing of wind, which does me no harm. Therefore, why not be patient? So this is verbal patience. And then mental patience. For mental patience. In an instance where one encounters someone who's angry, one's mind refrains from cherishing any enmity towards them. Where one is subjected to torment, one's mind remains undisturbed. Where one is subject to ridicule and ruinous behavior, one's mind remains free of resentment. This is mental patience. Hard. But these three first paramitas, giving, harmlessness, and patience, particularly of the six, these three seem to be most related to others and not harming others. I think three ways of benefiting and not harming others. Because patience is usually seen as the appropriate response to anger towards others. One nice place that it's very, very conducive for practicing patience is India. Yarrow and I were on this pilgrimage to India, and I think part of the going on this pilgrimage to these holy sites is because they're really inspiring to see, to remember the Buddha's life. But also, I think a great benefit of these pilgrimages, particularly India, is India is a country that's like really in your face. Constantly. It's like, oh, we're going to these holy places and so peaceful where the Buddha lived, and it would be so, we'll just be able to like walk and sit in samadhi for the whole time. And for sitting and walking in samadhi, I think India may be like the worst possible place. Maybe there are some places for this. It's loud, and it's and these holy sites to us foreigners are special because we make a long journey to get there. But for the locals, they're not particularly holy. It's just their home. So, and they got business to do. And it's hard partly because we know that they're poor and they're needing to feed themselves, and they're relying on the consumers from the first world, even the below the poverty line consumers. In India are like the super wealthy over there. And so we want to see that, we want to meet them. I feel anyway, I want to meet them as people, like person to person. But I often feel like they're not meeting me that way, actually. So it's this bind, it's a challenge. Like I'm just like a consumer object, and really extreme sometimes. Like they're really like dealing with you in a. I mean, they're on like autopilot, you know. Sometimes, yeah. And so it's a great practice of patience. And I remember, you know, we find different ways. First, we're just like. You know, go through some days of just being like really kind of like the self closes down, we get really like uptight, and then we realize there's no end to this. If we're going to leave our room, we're going to be like in this situation all day long, sitting, walking, standing, and lying down. So we find ways, which is often just like, just relax, and just, if we're walking, keep walking. If we're sitting, keep sitting. We don't need to get involved. We're used to getting involved. one moment particularly that comes to mind, I remember we had just left Vulture Peak in Rajagriha. And in another area of that city is Venuvana, the bamboo grove where Buddha and his disciples spent many practice periods. It was a donated park for the Sangha, and it's still a bamboo grove, big bamboo, and it's quite peaceful actually. I think because you have to maybe pay a few rupees to get inside, so it's relatively peaceful, but a few rupees is not very much, so some are willing to pay it to sell their wares. In the holy bamboo grove. So peacefully walking around this pond and in serene walking meditation, reflecting on Shakyamuni Buddha's life. And a young Indian boy is basically like sometimes dogs do this too. They don't even walk on the side of you. They walk actually like facing you, but in front of you, so that like if you get out of step with them, you'll just like trip over them, so they get in sync walking backwards with your steps. And literally like right in your face. Stone Buddha from the ancient Buddha time. Only 15 rupees for you. Special deal today only. No, thank you. And then, but then it's a loop. It repeats over and over. I think they understand no in English, but I think there's various tactics. Like, if we just keep doing this long enough, they'll buy it just to get rid of me. I think that really is a tactic, and sometimes it works. No, no, thank you. Please just 15 rupees are very special from this place only. And I think there were several of us maybe walking, and there were several of them in front of each of us with the same Buddha. And this is more dramatic too. I mean, they're like, their spiel is much faster. It's not relaxed in any way. It's agitating. I think, you know, I wasn't saying anything. I think I was just walking, with letting them do their thing, just walking. And this is a time to practice patience. This is the inspiration of the Buddha. And after a while going on that way, I think I was feeling quite relaxed already, and just, it's okay, we have time here, and just stop walking, and just like really try to meet the eyes of this young boy, and just really meet him eye to eye in silence for a while. And he kept doing the tape loop, kept going, 15 rupees only, 15. Now I've got his attention, 15 rupees, and I just smile, 15 rupees. At some point, it stopped, and he just looked at me, and then I didn't stop looking at him. So he I think he was taken a little aback and sort of shrank back a little bit, and smiled, and then just started doing it with the friend next to me. Yes. Yeah, what the image, right, was bodhisattvas metabolize suffering as generosity, I think. Like, they digest suffering and it comes out as giving, I think was the image.
Yeah, but in talking about this idea of acceptance, the word that comes for me is necessary denial. Because we can't assimilate. When we go someplace, if we move in the world out of our comfort zone and we start running into this, I don't think acceptance is. For me, I always struggle with this because I don't accept acceptance. And yet I don't have the wherewithal to change this. So I always feel like I move into some slightly sad state of denial, but a necessary state because they can't function without it.
Well, I think it's important to remember that acceptance is not, and patience and forbearance and endurance are all words like this, is not necessarily passive thing, right? Patient acceptance doesn't mean we don't do anything. It just means we accept the dynamic situation as it's happening, and within this patient acceptance, we can respond. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's like, I think often they get confused, and this is a good thing to watch, I think, too, as bodhisattvas, that we can get into a kind of passive patient acceptance. It's like, well, that means if I do anything, that would be like resisting what's happening, so I lose my patience. But I think within the larger context of patience, then a response can come forth, especially with this image of like, I'm really seeing this sesshin, all these paramitas as like ways that these different permutations of the independent self unravel themselves in different ways. So I think patience is like the small self that's like, that's kind of building up a wall of like resistance and aversion. And so it's just like, that one dissolves somewhat, then we become like, there's still this body and mind experience, but it's much more like permeable. And it's like, it can take a lot because there's not this core that's trying to like resist it. So we patiently accept then the suffering of ourself and others, and then response can come forth. Response of like, excuse me, that boot is worth much more than 15 rupees. I'll give you 100 for it. Or whatever. or just smile. I'm not going to buy that Buddha, but I really wish for you with my whole heart supreme happiness and joy in every moment of your life.
It's nice. I appreciate it. I think it's a good gesture along the way, but that's hard to talk about. But I mean, you mentioned the idea of putting yourself in harm's way to protect somebody else.
Yeah.
That level, that degree of selflessness and nobility. And I'm not doing it. I'm here.
Yeah, I'm not doing it either.
You know, well, and
this is very.
We'll deal with it, you know, and we can talk about it.
We'll deal with
it. The question remains, and for me, it's a burning question: is when you move into that world, what stops you from seeing it and saying, "I have to change in a way where I have to step in to this, stop my life as it is."
Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not. I don't expect it of people, and I'm not doing it. But it burns me.
I think that's like a wonderful, awesome burning, and I have that burning too. That question burns me too, but I feel like it's painful burning, but it's a I vow to be patient with that burning in myself, because it's disturbing. Like, can't we just forget about all of this intense suffering of the world? And how can we stay open to it, but also know that there's not some particular response? So Brian Wilson put his legs on this track. I don't think that's the appropriate response for everybody to go do that. I have a bunch of legless people. That was one person's response, right?
But maybe there wouldn't be a bunch of legless people, because if enough people did, things would change.
There's no set thing. It may be so, but that's one of, you know, myriad forms of suffering, right? So we do our part, and wherever we choose our peaceful battles. So this week it's this bubble of sesshin. We're sitting here studying the self to forget the self, to be actualized by myriad things, so that we can more openly respond. And then, who knows where our life energy will go. But we're, We're maybe just open to letting the suffering come to us. Sometimes it's like that. We don't have to go dig it up. It's everywhere. So yesterday was all about, you know, global warming and destruction and our consumer choices, right? So this is, you could say, some people could be putting a lot of attention on that and not be going out to the tracks, putting their legs on the tracks. I think that's great. And then some people putting their legs on the tracks, but then they're, you know, they had to drive a car to get there. Maybe, right? So they're like adding a little bit of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. So I think many people are working in many different ways, and I think we are called to different ways, and we don't have to do everything. Little ways. I also thought about, you know, I hope that yesterday's talk could have sounded kind of maybe hopeless or depressing when we think of like our tiny little impact in the vast world of environmental destruction and suffering of sentient beings. But it sometimes seems like this tiny little thing, but I thought of Suzuki Roshi's, Suzuki Roshi got this phrase in the Lotus Sutra, to shine one corner. Maybe we can find where that comes from at some point. It's the name of his little book of sayings. Bodhisattvas shine one corner of the world. And I understand this to mean like, we shine, we polish, we take care of our little sashin world. We polish this one in the harmony with each other. And we work in our little corner. The whole world, we can't shine the whole thing. But in shining our one corner, that's like, that shine is like connected to the rest, the other four corners, five corners, six corners, seven, infinite corners. And everybody just shining their corner is the work of the Bodhisattva way. I have these little cards from my teacher, Sokni Rinpoche, little like sayings to it's a card game. You pull one out at random, and I thought they're wonderful little contemplations, and I just happened to see the one sitting on top of the pile today, and like the synchronicity, because this is about patience. It says, patience is the absence of fear. Patience is the absence of fear. Yes.
One of the big sufferings is like Richard brought up, how much is and you with climate change. We're not powerful as individuals. In trying one corner of the world, and then the patience to live with the vast causes and conditions created by myriad beings forever that don't exist.
yeah, you combined it all there, actually, right? Yeah, patience with our, you know, the the first paramitas of our giving seems so feeble and meek in this world that needs so much. Our harmlessness seems so feeble and meek in this world where there's so much harm. How can we be patient with ourselves? And ultimately, yeah, the patient acceptance of the uncreate, that all of this is not really the way we're relating to it, in the gross, clunky way of, like, I have to do this now to fix this. I have to do this just like this. And then I think we get caught. And that's this middle way that I think is also a very dynamic thing that is arising in this consciousness of that, not getting caught and obsessed and having to do things a particular exact way on one extreme, and then the other extreme of not, like, the kind of little bit of laziness, maybe even in the name of, well, it's not really happening how I think anyway, so it's not that important. Whereas, what's the middle way? Not neglectful or obsessive. And yes, exactly. So I could paint that story of the me practicing patience with this boy who's like has a much more difficult life than me, right? So it's almost absurd. It's embarrassing, actually, to see how I could tell a story like that, right? I'm on pilgrimage in India, like, I can afford to go over there and do this thing, and then this guy's helping me practice my patience. That's, like, embarrassing. It's ridiculous. Yeah, moment to moment, each situation is a new opportunity. Thank you all for your great patience to continue to sit here day by day, and great diligence as well. It's truly inspiring and awesome to watch a sesshin happen, actually. You know, we don't know what's going on in each other's junkyards. But it doesn't matter. It's awesome to continue in this way. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.